Okay, good afternoon, everybody. As you can see, it's just me, it's not Rachel Nubley as well, so it's one for the price of two. I'm going to try and give you a quick overview of what we're doing on the conceptual framework with a view to giving you a pre-taste of what's going to be in our discussion paper, which we plan to publish early next month. So what I'll do is give you a summary of why we're doing the project. I'll give you a little reminder of where we've got to in previous work on the framework, and then I'll highlight two or three of the issues that I think may be of particular interest to you, and then try and leave a few minutes for some discussion and questions at the end. Now, we've had a project running for quite a long time on the conceptual framework. It's probably about 10 years or so. We were doing a lot of work together with the FASB throughout the 2000s. And then suspended work in 2010 to finish the MOU projects. The agenda consultation that we did in 2011 identified further work on the framework as a priority area. I think pretty much every response to the consultation said we ought to carry on with our work on the framework, perhaps even in preference to doing work on individual standards. I should say really what the objective of our work on the framework is. We actually think the framework as it stands is not a bad starting point. We've been using it fairly successfully for a couple of decades, and it's quite good as far as it goes. So we're not looking to throw away what's there and start again with a blank sheet of paper, but we're aiming to fill in the gaps in the framework and maybe clear up some areas that aren't aren't totally clear. So it's not a sort of bottom-to-top analysis of everything that should be there. It's very much building on what's in there. And I think it's important to understand that when you think both about what's going to be in the final framework and also what we're covering in the discussion paper that's about to come out. We're not trying to answer every question in financial reporting. We're not trying to discuss every alternative that might exist. The objective of the discussion paper is to cover the areas that we think are most important for us as we work towards an exposure draft. You'll see when the discussion paper comes out, not sure what it'll look like in the published format, but probably a couple of hundred pages or so. But it's not fully comprehensive. We could have spent 10 years writing 1,000 pages, and then you'd have probably spent 2 or 3 years trying to respond to that and probably not succeeding in responding to that. So we have tried to concentrate on the things that we think are most critical to deal with at this stage. So where have we got to? Well, we published two chapters in 2010 on the objectives and the qualitative characteristics. We also published an exposure draft on the reporting entity. And we're not planning to reopen the work on the first two chapters at this stage. I'll come back to that again in a second, but we're not planning to reopen that work. You won't see much about the reporting entity in the discussion paper either. Because we'd already got to an ED, we felt we had a reasonable amount of input on that. We didn't think there were any further questions at this stage that we needed to resolve before we move on to an ED. But there will be material on the reporting entity in the exposure draft we're working to. It's just we thought we had enough input to work towards the exposure draft with what we've got. There will be an appendix in the discussion paper which summarises what was in the reporting entity ED and highlights some areas that we think we need to work on as we work towards the ED itself. Now I'm going to give you a quick reminder of what's in chapters 1 and 3, really because that sets the scene for what's in the remaining sections that will be in the discussion paper. The objective of financial reporting is to provide financial information about the reporting entity that's useful for decisions about providing resources. And that's information both about the entity's resources and claims and changes in the resources and claims, and it's also information that you'd need to assess the effectiveness and efficiency of management's use of the resources. The qualitative characteristics, that's rather a long phrase really, but that's the characteristics, if you like, the factors that make financial information useful, and that the framework identifies two of those. This is in chapter 3 of the framework. The information ought to be relevant, and it ought to provide a faithful representation of the thing that you're trying to depict in the financial statements. In addition, there are four what are called enhancing characteristics, which are things that make the information more useful to users. The two I've just mentioned, relevance and faithful representation, are the fundamental characteristics. They're the ones that have to be there. These four are ones that can make the information more useful. So if it's comparable, if it's timely, if it's understandable, and if it's verifiable. So that was by way of background. Now I'll try and summarise what you're going to see in the discussion paper. And the first thing I should say is that the previous work on the project was joint with the FASB, but this is clearly an ISB project. We're looking to get input from other standard setters as well, but it's no longer a bilateral joint project with the FASB. What we're planning to do is we're really changing the approach. In the previous work, we were working on a phase-by-phase approach, and it had been planned to do eight phases. The first phase was the one we finished, the one about objectives and qualitative characteristics, so there were seven more still to come. People found it very difficult, to respond phase by phase because they want to know how all the pieces interlock. And so we're going for the opposite approach this time, really, which is developing the whole revised framework in one exercise. And so the DP is aiming to cover at least the range of issues. As I said, not every detail of every issue, but we're aiming to look at all the issues, so elements, recognition, derecognition, measurement, presentation and disclosure, all in one package. And the idea is that when you look at the DP, you'll be able to see everything in context, so you can see how each piece interacts with the other pieces. Timetable, as I mentioned, we're planning to publish the discussion paper in early July with a six-month comment period, and the plan is to work towards an exposure draft towards the end of next year and aim to issue the revised framework by the end of the following year. Now, people say that's an ambitious timetable, and of course it is quite an ambitious timetable, but I think it's important to remember the objective. The objective isn't to answer everything. It's to fill in those gaps that need filling in, and I think having a fairly tight deadline will actually discipline us to make sure that we only deal with issues that are essential and that can demonstrably improve the framework and ultimately help the board writing standards. That's the objective of the standard framework is to help the board write standards. Now, as I said, we've developed this in one package, so you won't have seen this as a long, drawn-out series of discussions on individual pieces. You'll actually be seeing the whole thing really pretty much in one go, and this will be your first opportunity, really, to give us much feedback on it. And that's deliberate, because I think if we'd got into a lot of detail on each piece, we'd have detracted from the idea of letting people see the whole package in one go. So that's the objective at this stage, to get something that covers the whole waterfront, but as a sort of a sketch, an outline, if you like, so that you can give us your reactions on that overall outline rather than the individual pieces. So that means really that I think the best way of seeing the discussion paper is that it's not the end of an extremely detailed process of working out the answers to everything, but the DP is intended to be the starting point for discussion. It's not sort of some way along the discussion, but it really is the starting point. And we're looking forward to some very active discussion on what's in there. We're planning to hold a series of round tables. We're trying to work out the details at the moment, but I think they'll most likely be around about October, November, so far enough into the comment period for you to have had a look at it, but not so near the end that you won't still have time to think about it some more before you send in your input. And of course, we plan to do the normal range of activities of talking to users, preparers, auditors, regulators, and so on through a variety of formats. Okay, let me pick up two or three of the bigger issues that are in the paper, and I'll concentrate on the ones where really the existing framework has very little to say. And the first is measurement. At the moment, the framework's only got one paragraph on measurement, and it's not a lot of help to to us in writing standards at the moment. So first of all, we've suggested an objective for measurement, which we've drawn from the objectives of financial statements, which is to contribute to faithfully representing relevant information about the entity's resources and claims, and also about changes in its resources and claims, and also about how efficiently and effectively management have managed the resources, have used the resources of the entity. Leading on from that objective, we've developed three principles, if you like. The first is the board has concluded that a single measurement basis isn't the answer to everything. So it's likely we'll be continuing to live in a mixed measurement type world. Secondly, when the board is deciding what measurements to use, it needs to consider what kind of information will be generated, both in the statement of financial position, that's the resources and claims, and also in the statement of comprehensive income, so that's the changes in resources and claims. So it's not just a balance sheet focus, but it's looking at what type of information is going to be generated by using these measurements, both in balance sheet terms and in income statement terms, if you like. And then the third sort of principle is that in deciding which measurements to use for particular items, the board should really be looking at how items contribute to cash flows. For example, does it contribute to them individually? Have you got an asset that's going to be sold by itself with no particular selling effort or no processing? Is it going to be part of a larger process that's going to involve lots of other activities? And the conclusion really that the board came to is that there isn't actually a single answer in all cases. So you can't always say just because an asset's going to be sold, it must be a current measurement. Or just because it's being used in a production process, it's going to be cost. It is something the board would need to decide on a case-by-case basis. And what we envisage is the framework would have some discussion to help guide the board as it makes those decisions. Now, of course, that might sound as if it's a recipe for having lots of different measurements as the board happens to feel fit on the day. One other thing the DP says is that the board should try to minimise the number of different measurements. It acknowledges it's not just going to be one measurement, but obviously the fewer you have, the more likely it is to be understandable. So we don't want to have too much variety in different measurement techniques. And as of course with all other parts of the framework, when the board's taking these decisions, it needs to consider cost-benefit issues as well. Moving on, another area the framework says little about at the moment is presentation. And the DP is covering that in two areas. One is there's some general discussion of presentation. But secondly, and I think probably of more interest, and I think what people will concentrate on more, is what it says about the question of profit or loss and other comprehensive income. And again, pretty much every response to the agenda consultation said the board needs to really sort out what it's doing with OCI, needs to have some criteria or at least some guidelines for when it's going to use OCI, what's the purpose of that, are we going to have recycling and so on. The discussion paper explores really two approaches and a variant on one of the approaches. The first approach is the one the board favours, which is to say, we do need to keep a defined subtotal called profit or loss. We're not going to discuss in the discussion paper whether it's one statement or two statements. We felt that's really a standards level issue, not necessarily an issue for the conceptual framework to get into. But the idea that there will be a subtotal would be in the conceptual framework. And then there are two variants of that, a narrower version and a broader version. I'll come back to that in the next slide. There is also an alternative view discussed in the discussion paper, which is not to keep that profit or loss subtotal, at least not as a sort of defined element in the defined subtotal in the conceptual framework, but to have a single statement with no recycling. As I said, that's an alternative that's explored in the paper, although it's not the one the board favours. It's the board favours the one that retains profit or loss and in fact with some recycling as well. I'll come back to the recycling as well in a second. So I've covered that slide as well. So let me go on to the first option we've got, which was a relatively narrow use of OCI. And we looked at various ways people have tried to distinguish profit or loss from OCI over the years. And probably many of these you've heard discussed as well. You've probably discussed many of these yourselves as well. It's things like a distinction between core and non-core, operating, non-operating, recurring, non-recurring, long-term, short-term. There's a variety of these things. A lot of those things overlap. They come down to similar places, but they don't come together exactly. And none of them taken individually really seemed useful as a sort of definer of what could go in OCI versus what goes in profit or loss. And so we went for a slightly different approach. First of all, we concluded we couldn't really define profit or loss because we felt that everything that's not going to be in OCI needs to be in profit or loss. And so to get to that, it's quite difficult to actually really come up with a definition of profit or loss. We felt it was easier to define or describe what is eligible to go in OCI. And so in this narrower use, we identified two particular circumstances where we thought OCI could be useful. The first is what we've called bridging items. And the notion here is that it is a set of circumstances where the board thinks that two different measurements are actually useful. And one measurement would be used in the statement of financial position. The other measurement would be used as a basis for the amounts that go in profit or loss. And I'll illustrate on the next slide what I mean by that. The second category was what we've called mismatch remeasurements. And the notion here is that you've got a transaction, you've got what you feel is the appropriate measure for the transaction, but it's linked in some way with some other transaction that risks causing confusion if it's not reported at the same time. And the classic example here is cash flow hedge accounting, where it seems the most appropriate way to measure the derivative is going to be at fair value or some other current value, but the other part of the transaction that it really seems to belong with either isn't recognized at all or maybe isn't on a current value type basis. And so the notion here was to use OCI while you've only got one leg of the transaction fully reflected in financial statements. Now let me just go on to give you an example of what I meant on the bridging items. So the example here would be where under the proposals in the exposure draft on IFRS 9, you've got a debt security that is eligible to be in the category of fair value through OCI. So we have two different measurements in play here. We're measuring it at fair value in the statement of financial position, and in profit or loss, we're using amortized cost type information. So if you look in the P&L, you see interest income, you see impairment losses if there are any losses. In OCI, you see fair value changes. And then if you sell the asset before maturity, you'll have a gain or loss recycled out of OCI into profit or loss. So what's happening there is that the cumulative amount in OCI is acting as a bridge between the two measurements. It's the difference between the amount that's in the balance sheet and the cumulative amount that's gone through profit or loss. So that's the notion there. Now, I said I'd mention recycling. This bridging notion really implies that you would have to recycle, because if you're going to use it as a bridge between two measurements, the only way to achieve that is to recycle. In this example here, to get amortized cost information in the P&L, you have to recycle on disposal. There's no other way of achieving that bridging. On the other category I mentioned, the mismatch remeasurements, again, really recycling seems to fall out automatically in that case, because if the rationale is that you're parking a remeasurement because the other linked transaction isn't yet there, then the natural thing to do is to link them once they're both in the financial statements in the same period. So again, recycling actually seems to be a natural consequence of the mismatch remeasurement notion. Now, we looked at some of the existing uses of OCI, and some of them don't really fit into either of these categories, the bridging or the mismatch remeasurement. And the one I'll maybe focus on is pensions. For pensions, it's not really a bridge between two different measurements. And the reason for that is that the amounts you report in profit or loss each period, you can't really derive them directly from a separate measurement basis. It's a series of individual disaggregations each period. But if you add up the cumulative total, you don't get a measurement basis that's really a coherent measurement in its own terms. It's just a sum of what's happened over time. And linked to that, really, it's very difficult to come up with a basis for recycling out of OCI for pensions as well. And so pensions didn't seem to fit that. So what we explored was a broader use of OCI that wouldn't just be limited to those two categories of the bridging and the mismatch, but there would be some other items. And the DP is probably going to label those as transitory remeasurements. Not a great name necessarily, but it's probably the one we're going to use in the DP. So the bridging and mismatch would apply, as I've already said. The transitory would be ones that meet all of the following conditions. They're settled or realised over the long term. There's a current period remeasurement that is expected or may reverse over the long holding period. And separating out the remeasurements enhances the predictive value, if you like, or the relevance of the information that's reported in P&L. And so that would, something like pensions might meet those criteria, for example. Now, if the board adopted this broader use of OCI, the notion is that it wouldn't be compelled to use OCI in these cases, but it would decide on a case-by-case basis whether it thought OCI was going to be the most the best way to present this information. So I think there's a trade-off here, really. I think the narrower use obviously tries to define OCI more tightly, and that's something a lot of people ask for in the response to gender consultation. On the other hand, it narrows it so much that maybe that's further than some people might think we should narrow it. But the price for the broader category is it is more diffuse, it's more fuzzy, it's more difficult to define what's in that category. The other thing I should say about that category is about recycling. Within that broader use, the bridging and the mismatch, as I said, you would recycle. For the transitory remeasurements, the board would have to decide on a case-by-case basis whether recycling was going to make sense or not. We found it difficult to come up with a general prescription for those cases. Okay, I've already mentioned the alternative of a single statement with no recycling and not necessarily a profit or loss subtotal. It would still be open to the board in this alternative approach to define profit or loss, but there wouldn't be any recycling between the below the line and the above the line. And if the board wanted to introduce a subtotal there, it could do that at the standards level. It wouldn't be built into the framework. The last area I wanted to mention is disclosure. This was, of course, was a big theme earlier in the year. We had the disclosure forum, and we're carrying forward the work on disclosures on several fronts. In the framework, we're going to say a bit about disclosure to give the board some guidance on when it's setting disclosures, for example, identifying the kinds of disclosures that might be useful. We've also got some short-term fixes that we might try and do to IS1, and then there's the notion that we might do a longer-term research project looking at disclosures overall at the standards level rather than the conceptual framework. And obviously there's a bit of a link, of course, between those, but they are separate projects in a way. Now, there are some other areas covered in the DP. In the interest of time, I'm not going to go through those now, but they're mentioned very briefly on the slides. And then, starting on slide 26, there's also a little summary there of what the overall content of the conceptual framework might be once we've finished all this. I think we've got about 5 minutes left for questions, Paul.
At least five. Stuff.
Thank you for the presentation. Two quick questions. The first one on the approach. You said you moved away from that eight-phase approach to one phase. I think it's rather two-phase approach because you got one or two chapters are done. If I remember correctly, when that eight-phase approach was introduced, there was a notion that at the very end, someone would revisit, or the ISB would revisit the entire thing to see whether any changes are needed at earlier parts through discussion that were later. Is that the same thing now with that first phase that has been completed, that this may see changes due to the further deliberations? The second one is a quick one. I don't know whether I've understood the OTI thing. The current IFRS approach for equity investment through OCI, what bucket would that fall in? Thank you.
Okay, on the phased approach, the idea is we wouldn't have that final phase H or whatever it would have been because we wouldn't have had eight phases. Now, it's true, of course, that as we work through the rest of the single phase, we might find that we need to make some changes to chapters 1 and 3. I mean, clearly there might be consequential amendments, for example. Now, what we don't want to do is to go back and redebate all those things in chapters 1 and 3 because you can spend forever discussing those, frankly, and not necessarily add much value by adding further to them. There are three areas that people have raised since the finalisation of chapters 1 and 3, or at least they raised it before, but it's sort of continuing probably to some extent, and that's in relation to stewardship, reliability and prudence. In the DP, we've got some discussion in there of the issues and where we think some of the sensitivities are. Our judgment at the moment is that we don't need to make changes to those chapters. It's conceivable we might need to tweak the words a bit if people haven't quite understood what the board's intention was, and that's something we can sort of monitor through the DP phase. But we don't plan to go back to the beginning and re-debate the sort of high level of those topics. On the equity investments through OCI, they don't fit the bridging notion because you can't really create a measurement basis that seems to make much sense that you would say was the driver of what's in P&L. So I guess one question that comes up there is, what's the board going to do if it decides that some existing use of OCI isn't compatible with whatever it comes up with the framework? Or even what if some existing use of P&L isn't compatible with the framework? And I think the answer there is it will depend. To my mind, what the board needs to do at that stage is it needs to give people a sense of what its plan is for dealing with any discrepancies that have emerged. And when I say plan, that's not necessarily a detailed action plan, but at least it's giving people a sense of whether it's something the board's willing to live with indefinitely, whether it's something it needs to deal with it immediately, whether it's something that it ought to do some research for before it decides what it's going to do. So I don't think it necessarily implies the board would change it. It doesn't necessarily imply it wouldn't change it.
I see three cards up. Joel?
Yes, this is a quick question. I recognize that this isn't a joint project between the ISB and the FASB, but my understanding was that there was going to be some assignment of a staff person from the FASB on this project, and I was wondering if that worked out and to what degree there was input from the FASB to date.
We've had a member of the FASB staff. In fact, it's Ron Lott, who's one of their senior technical guys, who was involved in the previous work on the framework as well. He's been seconded to us on a 50% basis. While he's working for us, he's working entirely for us and has been a member of the project team like any other member of the project team. He also has responsibilities at the FASB. He does whatever he's doing for the FASB and the other 50% of his time. He is, of course, also keeping them updated on what we're doing, but when he's contributing to us, it's purely as a member of our team. The FASB have been contributing in the same way as other ASAF members have been contributing since the ASAF was set up, but that's on exactly the same basis as all the other ASAF members.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. And first of all, I would like to praise the ISB in dealing with and tackling this difficult issue of the net income, OCI, and recycling in the conceptual framework project. Ideally, I think this should be dealt with in the elements of recognition section, but the place, of course, is a secondary consideration. And the conclusion reached by this project in one way or the other, I think we sure help make the IFRS a truly robust set of accounting standards. And having said that, let me very briefly introduce the views of Japanese users about this point, which is slightly different from the three approaches that you have explained to us. We basically support the broader OCI plus full recycling. There are a lot of reasons behind this support of full recycling, but let me mention only one this time. By recycling everything throughout the life of the corporation, the total amount of net income, comprehensive income, and cash flow would be exactly the same. So in other words, financial statements are sort of connected by three bridges instead of two bridges. Put it this another way, there would be the clean surplus relationship for net income. If there is clean surplus net income, we can use net income as an input to the residual income model, which is a corporate valuation model widely used amongst the financial statement users. And this kind of view, support of full recycling, is not only particular to Japanese users. In the March meeting of the CMAC, Capital Markets Group, one analyst from a Scandinavian country, from Sweden, mentioned the support for the full recycling. And in the final deliberation, I asked the board to pay attention to this fourth alternative approach. Thank you.
We look forward to your comment letter on the discussion paper.
I will. I will.
Julie, I think you were next.
My comment, in a word, is cash. And the backdrop is, as I ask, we sometimes meet with constituents, and I remember meeting with analysts fairly recently. And one said, you know, what I really want to know, all these remeasurements and fair values are nice, but what I really want to know is, have they generated any cash and are they free to pay it out in a dividend if they decided to do so? And he says, I have trouble, you know, navigating to that. So that comment resonated with me when I read the objective of measurement, especially the how efficiently and effectively management and the board have discharged their responsibilities to use the entity's resources. And if I were this gentleman, I would probably say, and have generated any cash, you know, and whether they have generated any cash. So I guess on his behalf, just a plea that somehow the role of cash generated and availability for dividends has got to make its way in here somewhere, I would think.
I see three cards remaining. Liz, we'll assume yours is still in the upright position.
Thank you. Yes, very much welcome this and the accelerated timetable, and particularly looking at OCI and performance reporting. But as institutional investors, we still remain of the view that the purpose of financial statements is to provide us with the information we need. We're providers of risk capital and bearers of the residual risk. Other interested parties are protected by contract and do not bear those risks. And we do remain concerned that the issues of prudence, stewardship and reliability are not being looked at. In particular, we think that this could impact on the decisions that are made in the forthcoming chapters in that framework. And particularly in relation to prudence, I mean, there's so much prudence in the standards in any event. Why can't we just state that it's there? Because I think it would appease a lot of people that are concerned with what's happening. Thank you.
Jeff, and then Roger.
Thank you. Just a comment and a quick question. As you know, the OCI has an infamous history in U.S. accounting standard setting. I think it can be summarized in two sentences. I was looking at a previous letter from the FASB's Investor Technical Advisory Committee to the FASB Technical Director, now Chairman Russ Golden, back in 2009. It says, we observe that OCI has neither a conceptual definition nor a compelling economic rationale. Rather, it has arisen from a series of standard-setting compromises and served as an out-of-earnings receptacle for items that encountered opposition in either recognition or measurement, unquote. My question is, you mentioned, and on page 17, you note that the ISB does not have to use OCI for all items that qualify in the categories that you've mentioned. Was there any discussion as to whether the concept statement should have a general prohibition against the use of OCI, but then mentioned categories that might be used if for cost benefit or for other reasons they decided to go in that direction? Thank you.
One point I should have made is that in terms of using OCI, it would still be the board's decision to use it, so it wouldn't be up to individual entities to decide when to use it, so it would still be the board's decision. I think it's linked a bit to the question of which approach the board goes with. I mean, if it goes down the narrower approach, I think it's more likely you would say in the framework, these are the two cases when we think it's useful, and that might either implicitly or explicitly exclude using it in other cases. If you go down the broader approach, it's inherently a little bit more fuzzy anyway, and probably slightly more difficult to say at least you must use it in these cases. Whether you then find other cases when you might want to use it, I think that's a good question for discussion.
Roger.
Thank you, Chairman. Peter, thank you very much for that presentation, and I'm pleased to see that this subject of conceptual framework is moving forward. In your presentation, there was a lot of reference made to the fact that what you're considering doing is for the purpose of the board, which suggests that your primary user of what you're doing is the board. This is a narrower user group than currently exists in literature. I just wonder if there's a subtle change taking place here.
There is a slight change there because the existing framework says here's a long list of users. The board is one of them. There's preparers, users, regulators, and so on. We felt it would actually be more useful in developing the rest of the framework if we narrow down a bit more closely on the board as the primary beneficiary of what's there. It's intended to be a practical tool for the board writing standards. Now, of course, other people use it. For example, preparers, obviously, if they don't have a particular standard that covers them, they need to look to the framework. I think more generally, you can see the standards as being implementations of what's in the framework. So it helps. If you understand the framework, you understand the standards better. But we did think that when it came to the difficult decisions about what goes in there, it's better to focus on what it's mainly there for, which is to help the board write standards.
Mark, we'll give the last point to you.
Very brief. First of all, I want also to commend you for the pragmatic way in which you seem to be going about the project. I think that's what was asked for and what you're responding to on what you say, an ambitious timetable. I would like to echo, though, the comments from Liz. I had the same point, and I just want to add my support to that. I think you say you're going to mention reliability, prudence, and stewardship. I think you should actually just ask the question and see whether you can also deal with that in a pragmatic way. I understand that you don't want to reopen, you know, all of the discussion, but I think you would be well advised to give that sufficient attention. Yes.
Peter, any final observations? Brace yourself. This will provoke a reaction, but I sense the strong support of council to see this going forward quickly and as a package. I think most people sense that you do need to see the total package before you can buy in to the deal, if you will. All right. Well, thank you for that. We'll look forward to the discussion paper out, I think you said, within the matter of next month or so. Very good. We're pretty much back on track time-wise, so I think we could turn it over to the IFRS for SMEs.